Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the April luncheon of the South Australian Press Club, and a particular welcome to those who haven't been to one of our club functions before. I'm Grant Hedding, a committee member, and I think it's important that the club has recognised the re-emergence of Adelaide as a major motor racing venue. It's probably fair to say that Adelaide went through a prolonged period of mourning, I think it could best be described, after we lost the Formula One Grand Prix to Melbourne, and everyone, I think, was desperate to revive those great times. And the sensational Adelaide 500 promises, I think, to do just that. Ticket sales, I gather from Mike Drewer this morning, are nothing short of spectacular, and clearly stamp the event as the biggest V8 supercar race in the country. Bathurst, for example, attracts around 30 to 40,000, but we're looking at a Saturday crowd of at least 80,000 and as many as 100,000 on Sunday. Pitt Strait has 12,000 grandstand seats, the same number as the Grand Prix, and all but 1,000 of these are sold. All other grandstands around the track are sold out. And there are 17,000 corporate seats in 100 trackside facilities, and these are all taken. So it really is a fantastic showcase for the state. I'd like to welcome to Adelaide and welcome to this function Greg Murphy. He's one of the V8 drivers who will line up in the 500 to be run, of course, over two stages on the Saturday and the Sunday. And we'll hear from Greg later. He's been down to the track already. He's only been in town for a few hours and he's been down to the track, so we're anxious to hear of his impressions of the circuit. But for now, enjoy your meal, enjoy your company, and we'll hear again later from Greg and see what he has to say.
For Anton to get off his mobile. Let's all boo Anton. Is that embarrassing or what? Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sue Fraser. On behalf of my colleagues on the South Australian Press Club Committee, it is my pleasure to acknowledge Telstra as a corporate supporter of the Press Club and to thank Telstra for pledging a further 12 months of their support. And Bill Allen, it's nice to have you here with us today from Telstra. Thank Telstra, please. Many thanks also to Qantas, who give us airfares when we require them. And also to SA Brewing and Robbie Cooter for supplying for your enjoyment today their Southwark Black Ale and Harm Premium Light, the Harm Premium Light. So they're available for you today to enjoy. And we are currently in the process of updating our mailing list. Get this right. Updating our mailing list. And if you'd like to receive notification of our Press Club lunches, just speak to Merle out there at the front desk. Some diary dates for you. April 29. Now, this will be very good, I think. The very passionate Peter Garrett, lead singer of Midnight Oil, I've got that right, haven't I? And spokesperson for the Australian Conservation Foundation. And on May 18, the one and the only Sam Moon. The Press Club is non-profit, and just to help us balance the books, we run a raffle. So we've got tickets again today, $2 for a ticket or $3 for $5, cheap at half the price. And today you could win for yourself 6 bottles of wine, a mixed half dozen from the Press Club, a Telstra gold pen and pencil set, the $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe as always. Thank you, Alan Rogers, it's wonderful. The Rock Lobster in Gouges Street, where you go for Southern Rock Lobster and all those wonderful other exotic seafood. $50 voucher from Ragoni's Bistro in Lee Street, a long-time favourite for a superb Italian meal. And, of course, a carton of South Australian Southwark Pale Ale. So, buy up those tickets today. Now, as a courtesy to our guest speaker, Anton and everybody else, turn off your mobile phone. And it's time to formally introduce our guest speaker. Would you please welcome back the news manager of Channel 10 Adelaide, Grant Hedding. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. I think the best that I can say of Greg is something that Mike Drew just passed on to me then, that Mike, who certainly knows his racing driver, has been around the tracks for more years than he'd like to remember, I guess, but he certainly describes Greg as probably the most outstanding young talent in Australasia at the moment. And I think that's terrific. Greg is a New Zealander who's based in Melbourne. He's a member of the WINS Holden Racing Team, and Greg's credentials are certainly impressive. He's a winner at Bathurst 3 years ago, the Tickford 500, the New Zealand Mobile Sprint Series, and he finished second in class at the Le Mans 24 Hour, and he's also won the Sandown 500. And as I said earlier, Greg has been down at the circuit already today, and I'd call on you now, Greg, if you could, to give us your impressions of the circuit, and we're all anxious to hear of your tales from the racing series, so welcome.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be back in Adelaide, and also to be back for something that we've been all looking forward to so much since this was announced last year. And I think I speak on behalf of every competitor who will be here this weekend. It's really something special, and it's just a pleasure to be back in Adelaide for an event that we miss from the Grand Prix disappearing a few years ago. But I think we'll find this year there'll be a lot of memories brought back, because I think the event is going to be just as big, if not bigger, than the Grand Prix. And just to like to congratulate Adelaide and the LA government and everyone for putting their sort of hearts and souls into it and organising this, because it's going to be great for motor racing in Australia, great for V8 racing, and hopefully great for Adelaide. As Grant said, I've already been down to the circuit. I was down there this morning. We arrived, myself and Stephen Richards, my teammate, arrived in this morning at 9:30. And our first task was to head straight down there. And Mark was down there doing some stuff for Channel 10. So we ripped down there, and we didn't have to be asked twice to get down there and have a look at the circuit. And I must say, you know, we weren't quite sure what to expect. We'd seen a few bits on TV, some shots from the circuit, the grandstands and bits and pieces. But until you actually get there and have a look at it, it's a different story. But arriving down there this morning and looking around and seeing the work and the effort that had gone into it, I honestly thought I just arrived at the Adelaide Formula One Grand Prix. It resembles exactly what we got used to 3 or 4 years ago. The standard is second to none, and really brings back those memories and the thoughts. And I think the big thing about it is that the V8s are the number one category here this weekend. So that's the difference. But really, the feeling is as it used to be. It feels like F1. It looks like F1. The circuit is fantastic. And really, we just can't wait to get our cars out there and start thrashing them around. I think, obviously, the loss of the Grand Prix from Adelaide to Melbourne obviously hit home here pretty hard, and it was very disappointing. And for all us drivers, I can honestly say, too, that I raced here in 94 and 95 in Formula Holden and in Super Touring, Audi Super Touring race cars. And we just used to love coming here. The way the circuit is encompassed by the city, the way it is so close to the city, and the way that the people, the public, the locals treat the race and really, really draw it in and support it, is something very, very special. I think that is the main difference between Melbourne and Adelaide, and something that a lot of us do miss. The Grand Prix in Melbourne is a fantastic event. but it is very, very different to what it used to be here. And that's basically because of the friendliness and the way the circuit is so close to the city. And that really does draw in the atmosphere amazingly. In Melbourne, it's extremely different. The circuit is basically a permanent circuit, permanent facility, which is there all year round. Obviously, they put up the concrete walls and the fences and everything every year. But here in Adelaide, a pure street circuit, which I love racing at. I think the street circuits are the best circuits in the world. This used to be one of my favourite races, and now probably the IndyCar Grand Prix is one of my favourite races. And I don't know what it is about it, but a lot of concrete walls, a lot of concrete walls, no runoff. And Adelaide's very similar to that. There is a bit more runoff here in Adelaide than there is at Surfers Paradise. But at Melbourne, there's a lot of room, runoff everywhere, big, huge gravel traps. There's a lot of concrete, but the concrete's a lot further away than it is here in Adelaide, or it was at Surfers Paradise. So pure street circuit compared to a permanent, basically a semi-permanent facility, the two circuits are very different. So really, when Adelaide, when they left Adelaide behind and went to Melbourne, they went on to a whole new type of circuit in a whole new facility, which was a real shame because I think we'd all come to love and enjoy the place here and coming over here. So I think this is a fantastic opportunity for the V8s to come here. The V8 category in Australia has been going now for quite a few years. I think it was 94 that it first came into true V8 formula with Ford and Holden racing their 5-litre Falcons and Commodores. Since then, it has evolved amazingly in the last few years, and especially last year and this year, the popularity of the formula has just grown and grown and grown at a huge, huge rate. And sometimes I look at it and think, though, the people that run it, Avesco and Tia and things, that sort of are lacking behind a little bit because the professionalism of the teams and how many cars and drivers are actually driving in the category these days, and also the teams that and the people that want to get into racing V8s. There's a 13-round championship this year in Australia, all rounds accounting, that's including Bathurst. Obviously, the inception of the Adelaide 500 has added a whole new perspective to that, with the different setup of the day, or 2 days now, with the 250k race on both days, has changed the way we've all got to think about it considerably. With Bathurst, obviously a 1,000k race, set the Sandown, well not the Sandown 500 anymore, but the Queensland race, 500k race, all counting for points, double points for the championship. It really does change the whole way you've got to strategically look at the whole championship. And that's really, I mean, the teams have really got to think about that a lot, because it used to be 10 rounds, sprint championship, 30 races a year for the year, and then look at the endurance races after that. And basically used to break those up completely and look at the two of them in a whole new light. And there was no pressure on, there was pressure on to win those races, but there was no pressure for the championship. It was broken down. This year, Bathurst being part of the championship, 1,000 kilometres around Bathurst is a very, very difficult race. And as you know, I know when I was a kid, I used to sit there every first weekend of October, which is now obviously November, and watch them go round and round for 6 hours. The torture on one of those cars for 6 hours is immense. The costs are huge. And to now have the extra added pressure of going up there and trying to get 100 points for your championship is quite different. And the teams are really having to look at it and really think about what they're going to do for those races. Two 250k races here this weekend. There's a bit of a talk about the way the format has been laid out, with 250k's on Saturday and then stopping. Basically, we've got one race broken into two with a night between the two of them, and on Sunday afternoon we continue on basically when we left off on Saturday. So there's a few issues there to look at, and obviously we've got to be very careful that we don't have the car sitting on the sideline 30 laps into the first race on Saturday. Therefore, if that is the case, starting on Sunday last or at the back somewhere, you're straight away 35, 40, 50 laps down on the leaders, so therefore you don't, the chance of getting any points at the end of the day on Sunday very, very slim. So it's something we've got to all think about. We want the cars to be there at the finish on Saturday, which is just as important as being there at the end on Sunday. The points for Sunday, 100 points for the first place getter, it's a lot of deficit to make up if you don't get any at all. The point system, the way it's structured, the normal sprint races is 50 points for first, and it's broken down 46, so on, down right down to, I think it's 20th position. So, it's all very important at the end of the day when you're looking at adding up points for a championship, which includes such races as Bathurst and things like that. We've had a huge increase in numbers in cars at Eastern Creek 2 weeks ago, or weekend before last. We had 44 cars racing there, which over last year is about an increase of about 16 to 18 cars. And really, when you're all sitting on, trying to fit on a circuit the size of somewhere like Adelaide, you're going to find there's going to be a lot of action, a lot of back markers getting lapped within 250k's, getting lapped a few times, which in itself is going to create some drama, I'm sure. That's the kind of fields we're looking at these days. The V8 formula is so popular. And really, I mean, we're just sitting at the table before talking about when we were all children and our dads had a Holden or a Ford, and basically that's the way we've been growing up. New Zealand's no different. I come from New Zealand, but that's no different. My dad used to drive a Holden, so therefore I've just been a Holden fan all through and through. So there's no way we'll get me driving a Ford. But, that's the way it has happened. The formula has become so popular, and really it's one of the most popular in size, one of the biggest sawmills in the world today. And it's still on the growth, still on the up, with the way that they're looking at the future, with the inception of the Adelaide 500, the changes they're making, trying to make the championship more exciting, a bit more diversified. Just the things that they're doing with it are becoming, making it more and more exciting. And there's more and more drivers that want to get in there. At Eastern Creek the other week, at the first round of the championship, we had the first 20 cars were covered by something like 1.9 seconds. Which really, you know, it's a task in itself to get yourself inside the top 10. If you can get inside the top 10, you're doing very well. I was sitting on the grid for the second race at Eastern Creek. I was on grid 9, and I'm thinking, oh, I want to be at the front. You know, I'm a bit further back. I didn't want to be where I was. 9th is not good enough. And then I sort of looked in the rearview mirror, and I could see all these cars behind me, Dick Johnson, Paul Radisich. The list goes on. I can't even think at the moment. But there was 10 cars behind me that I could have quite easily been behind. They could have been in front of me. And looking at it and thinking, well, 9th maybe isn't so bad. But you never stop trying to work to get to the front. But it's so competitive. There is 20 drivers, 20 cars, combinations that are capable of being on the podium at any time. And really, I think as championships go, that's a pretty phenomenal sort of record to have, looking at the field, the quality of the field, the depth of the field that we do have. And really, I don't see that changing. I think that's going to continue on. We're going to find that we're going to have a few more drivers, a few more teams, even the chance of having some more drivers from overseas coming and racing in this formula. I think that's got the potential in Australia to have that happen. I think it's going to get recognised more and more around the world as a potential to come and race in Australia. And I think the professionalism of the sport, the V8 racing in Australia, is going to grow and grow and grow over the next 5-10 years. And having people like the network, like Channel 10 involved, Network 10 involved in the broadcast, which we've seen over the last couple of years, change the way V8 racing's been looked at has been quite amazing. The broadcasting, the coverage of the events is fantastic. It really has taken it to another level, and you know, that's why I think one of the reasons I think that so many people want to get involved in the motorsport these days and get involved in V8 racing. The V8 cars. The modern V8 car, supercar these days, is not a cheap vehicle to build and run. We've got in the Wins Racing team two brand new VT Commodores. Stephen Richards' car was finished the week of Eastern Creek, so it's just over 2 weeks old. One of these cars takes about, they started building that car just at, when was it? Actually, just after Christmas, and it was finished only 2 weeks ago. And that was basically guys full time, 7 days a week, most weeks, working on this car trying to get it finished. And at the end of the day, you've got a brand new VT Commodore sitting there valued at about $350,000. So they're not a cheap vehicle to run. We don't take a standard V8 SS off the floor of the showroom and take it round to the workshop and pluck the suspension out, things like that, and then put new bits and pieces in. The shell is bought direct from Holden, and here in Elizabeth, the shells come from here, and they go as a bare shell to the race team, and from there on, they are turned into a $350,000 race car with a roll cage, safety equipment, the engine, the gearbox, and everything put in, which is all specific to these cars. So they're not a cheap car to have. To run will require this year to run two VT Commodores competitively for the whole season, with 13 rounds, including Bathurst. Around $2 million to run the two cars, so that's the kind of budgets we're looking at for the top level of teams. The top level HRT are probably running just over $3 million for the year, including testing and bits and pieces like that. So it does change things considerably when you look at how much money it's going to take to run two cars for an entire season. It really just goes on and on and on. I suppose some of the restrictions that we've got this year, which have changed. Hopefully a little bit on how much it costs to run, are the testing restrictions and bits and pieces that have been implemented, which did start last year, beginning of last year, and that is that we've, every team throughout the in the championship must pick a circuit, wherever they may be based, or they can pick one out of their state, it doesn't really matter, but pick one circuit for the whole season, and that is the only circuit we're allowed to test on for the whole year. Now, if our test track, the Wins Racing Team test track, is at Calder in Melbourne, and basically that's our circuit. We are not allowed to go and test anywhere else. we gather information, obviously, at every race meeting we go to, at every circuit, and hopefully trying to gather that, analyse information, and then try and turn it into something when we go to maybe Phillip Island or something like that. But basically, if we want to go out testing and try something, we've got to go to Calder. This year also, they've implemented a one-tyre control tyre formula, which is Bridgestone have got that. They've got the control tyre contract for this year and for the next couple of years also. So every single car out there runs on exactly the same tyre. There's no more Yokohama, Bridgestone, Dunlop tyres to choose from. Everyone's on a Bridgestone tyre, which has been fantastic for a lot of teams. It's also made everyone sort of shut up a little bit because it's been an issue for quite some time. About tyres, it's quite easy to blame your tyre when you're not going good. So it's my tyres, they're terrible, rather than maybe looking at something else. So that's been a big change. Every class is on a Bridgestone, every car is on a Bridgestone tyre. So that's evened things up a bit. Some people thought by getting the tyre that they believed was the best tyre that they would all of a sudden be sort of elevated from 23rd up to 3rd. That hasn't happened. The same teams that really were at the top of it at the last few years are still at the top of the field, which was expected. It's just brought everyone a little bit closer. And I really think it's the best thing that could happen. It's one of the best things that's happened to the formula since its inception. I think having the control tyre eliminates a lot of niggling outside the scenes, a lot of problems with people blaming this and blaming that, and it just makes every team work a little bit harder. So I think that's been one of the things that's really improved the sport, and something that's really going to make it interesting and exciting for the next few years. But all in all, V8s is very, very strong. They've got some good plans coming through, good ideas coming through, and all I can see is that the championship is going to grow and grow and grow over the next 4, 5, 10, 15 years. I think it's really got some good momentum going now, and with events like Adelaide 500 being included, I think it's going to up the ante even more for the circuits that have been on the calendar for a long time. We've lost a couple of circuits. Malalau obviously has been pushed aside, but with the Adelaide 500, we've retained a spot here in South Australia. The Lakeside Circuit up in Queensland has been pushed aside, but we've got two races in Queensland now, one at Willowbank and one at Darlington Park. So, you know, things are changing. The standards are becoming higher. They're a lot better for now for the teams and the drivers. And it's just, that's what it's all about, professionalism, moving ahead. And I think the sport is really on a path to stardom and achieving a lot more. So with a bit of luck, this weekend will be very successful. You'll see a couple of women's racing Commodores at the front at the end of the day. Still won't mind being second, I'm sure. We're really just looking forward to it. It's great to be back here in Adelaide. The support from it all is fantastic, and if the crowd figures are anything to go by, Mike, we're in for a big one, and we'll be here for many, many years to come. So hope to see all your faces there on the weekend. I'm looking forward to it, and as is everybody else, and I just hope it's a great success, which I know it will be. Thank you very much.
Driver, you don't see that it is a street track, so how do you compare a street track like ours here to a normal track as a driver? I mean, not seeing that it is a street track.
Yeah, sure, I suppose, yeah, good point. I mean, you don't see it as a street track, you don't see the barriers and bits and pieces, but at the end of the day, in the back of your mind, they're always there. So, and I suppose it comes to reality when you have a bit of a moment or you have a bit of a spin and the first thing you hit is a concrete barrier. I mean, you've basically got to put that out of your mind, and I suppose that's the difference between some people, that some drivers aren't able to get to the reality that, you know, okay, it's still another track, there's concrete there, but, you know, you try and ignore it and pretend it's not there and get on with the job. And some guys just can't do that, some drivers can't do that, and that's a bit of a difference. Someone who's prepared to push that little bit harder and take a bit of a risk because, you know, they're prepared to do that, purely and simply because they, you know, they want to go a bit harder. They're not worried about what's around them, and you know, you're not there to make mistakes. So if you've got confidence in yourself, you'll always go push a bit harder and not worry about what's around you. But you know, it does come and bite you sometimes. I mean, that's the effect of it all, and that's the downside to being on a street circuit, is if you do make a mistake, it's usually fairly disastrous. I think there's something I didn't really get into before. I think that it's going to be very, very difficult, and I think it's going to be underestimated by a lot of people how difficult this race is going to be. We were talking about fitness before. Stephen and myself train 6 days a week, fitness, and up for this race, preparing for this race weekend. We've been doing heat training and bits and pieces like that, where we've stuck ourselves in a room, heated it up to 30 degrees, and sat on our push bikes for an hour and a half statically at 145 beats per minute on our heart monitors. You sweat like anything, but inside the cars this weekend it's going to be between 40 and 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Celsius, sorry, for an hour and three quarters usually. I think it will be. I think an hour and three quarters, I think, for the race. Do you think, Mike? Will be? Yeah. Hour and three quarters on Saturday and on Sunday. So physically it's extremely demanding. And I think a lot of drivers will have underestimated how difficult and how demanding it's going to be on them. And I really do think you're going to see a few incidents out there purely and simply because some drivers have got so fatigued that it's got too much for them. It's going to be very, very tough. No one's had to do this before, put themselves through what we're going to have to put ourselves through this weekend. Bathurst drivers have done double stints, but Bathurst is actually, believe it or not, a fairly easy circuit to drive around. I mean, it's not easy as in being able to go very fast, but it's easy physically because you've got such big gaps down Conrad Straight, up Mountain Straight, where you can relax. And, you know, the car just does what it wants to do up there. You just sort of hang on to the steering wheel and change gear. And really, it's not difficult to do. So you get these big breaks where you can grab your drink, your hose, and stick it in your mouth and have a big drink and have time to take it back out and prepare for the corner coming up. Adelaide, we won't have that. There's no time to break. We're looking at the main straight before. Is it Barrett? Is that Barrett Street? Bartels Road. We're not even sure enough if we're going to get into sixth gear there. The car's a six speed, and we'll probably, if we do get into sixth, it'll just be into sixth, and then we'll have to change down again for the chicane. So, you know, that's the difference we've got here this weekend. It's going to be very physical, and I think you're going to see a few people pretty exhausted at the end of day one, let alone day two.
Yeah, thanks. With cars being worth $350,000, does that ever influence your decision as a driver at a certain part of the track? If you see an opening, for example, to go for it, does it influence you to think that this car is worth $350,000? And secondly, if the worst does happen and that you have a prang, what happens? You say you've got two cars. What happens as a backup car or other cars?
Yeah, we actually don't have a backup car. But back to your first point, I think probably Fred Gibson, our team owner, would like to think that we thought about how much the cars cost before we made a move on someone or went for a gap. But as a race car driver, you know, a bit of red mist comes up, and you, at the start of the race, you sort of say, "I'm going to take it nice and easy, and be careful and all that." But when the lights go green, that usually gets thrown out the window, and you just go mad. You do think about not so much the cost, but you think about getting to the finish. And at the end of the day, that's this weekend especially is really going to have to come into it. If there's a move that you think, "Oh, I'll pass this, I want to pass this guy." If it's 50-50, you'll definitely back out rather than to get yourself into some trouble. So you do have to really think about it all and concentrate and think about the finish, not about, you know, if you're 20 laps into it, think about getting past this guy here. Well, you're better off to wait and hold off and see what happens later on. But, you know, it's very difficult to, at that point, you've got to make a split decision straight away and you don't have time to think about it. So, you know, sometimes you make the right decision, sometimes you make the wrong one. As in spare cars, we don't have a spare car. If the car does get badly damaged on Saturday, then, you know, we've got to either work out if we're going to fix it, get it back to the shed and get it sorted out for the next day, or what we're going to do. But that's all, it's all determined by how bad or, you know, what you've got to do to fix the car. But if it's bad enough, you won't see you on Sunday. So that's the way it works.
Bob Main over here, a little petrol head from way back.
Not really, I'm just glad I don't work for RIA Racing Insurance. perhaps a two-pronged question. You may choose to answer whichever way you like, of course. Why is Australia's road toll still so high? And one way or another, does motor racing of your kind play any role in that?
The road toll, obviously I think it was not a very good Easter again in some parts of the country. I think a lot of it is to do with, is really, my opinion, is a bit of ignorance on most drivers' parts. Knowledge of what they're actually doing on the roads is it's not sort of drummed into people early enough, and there's not enough of it. Things that I get frustrated with when I'm on the road. And as you know, I might be a race car driver, but you know, we don't go speeding around the countryside and going mad. We get to do that on the racetrack. But things that I notice on the road are people who on a two lane highway who are travelling and doing 80 kilometres an hour, 60 kilometres an hour in a 100 or 110 zone that refuse to get out of the way. And you find that people get frustrated and they pull out and try to pass them, and there's your accident, head-on collisions and things like that, blind corners and bits and pieces. And I just think it's not education of that kind of thing, and also stubbornness by people who, you know, who don't move over and get out of the way of other motorists on the road is a big problem. But also just the lack of respect for motor vehicles these days, how fast they are, the lack of understanding on how quick they are and what they're actually, how much of a weapon they can actually turn out to be. As motor racing goes, did you mean motor racing, people watch motor racing then decide they're motor racing drivers, that kind of thing? Essentially that. I'm sure that is that could be a bit of a problem, and obviously it'll probably be the young males aged between 19 and 25 or something like that, which would be the type of person that would think that they were racing car drivers once they've been to Eastern Creek or once they've been to Adelaide 500 on the weekend. They'll get on the roads and go mad. I don't know what we can do about that. That's very, very difficult. Maybe I think motor racing drivers should be involved more in campaigns with advertising, TAC, bits and pieces like that, and try and drum things across. In New Zealand, they've had, with the ACC over there, Peter Brock's done a lot of advertising over there with kids and training and doing a lot of ads with kids, teaching them what to do in situations on the road and bits and pieces, and that's been a very successful campaign. And I think motor racing drivers maybe should be asked with about their input, or get an input from them more often, or have be a bit more involved in with young people on the roads and education and that kind of thing. But there doesn't seem to be many of us that get asked to do that kind of thing, and I'm sure would most of us be pretty happy to do it if that was the case or there was a purpose for it. But it seems that the police and other people seem to know a little bit better than what we do, so that's the way it is.
There's Ryan.
During Bathurst, there seemed to be an extraordinary high number of tyre blowouts.
Yeah, I know that. I was involved in a few.
Were you? Good. I thought you might be. Now, Bridgestone's got the monopoly. And the commentary at the time was, there's another bloody Bridgestone's blown out. Bridgestone's version of the events, which I've checked on later, was that race cars, when they're set up, normally are the front wheels are at a camber of 7 degrees.
Right.
And that during this particular race, that a lot of the drivers or the team set their wheels at 11 degrees and therefore put additional stress as they're going around the corners. I just wondered whether you'd like to comment about whether or not the Bridgestone tyres are complete crap.
Do you work for Dunlop? No, I don't know. That's not actually the case. The reasons for that actually happening, I think Bridgestone have got a fair idea of what actually did occur there. They haven't released a statement on that, or I haven't heard, but it was probably a bit of a combination of things going on there. To tell the truth, I don't actually honestly know what the story was, but what happened in my car was we had a tyre blowout at the end of Conrad Strait. And it was on the right hand side of the car. It didn't seem that there'd been any flat spotting or you know, misuse of the tyre in any way. We didn't have excessive use of camber on the car. Camber is the front wheels are negative or positive camber, and they on the front end of the car they that's negative camber, so they lean in like this, and we run between 6 and 7 degrees of negative camber on the front end of the car. We didn't have excessive camber on the front at any stage. And we're not quite 100% certain of what the reasons were behind it. There may have been a fault in the car somewhere that we didn't know about that caused it to do it, or there may have been a flat spot on the tyre which also caused it to do it. But there's no 100% proof of any sort of wrongdoing by Bridgestone or anything like that either. But so far the tyres this year have been fantastic. Was that diplomatic enough?
Peter Sillon.
Yeah, Greg, Dick Johnson was in a recent article here in the paper bemoaning the fact that the skill level among the young drivers in particular wasn't up to scratch. Like the years gone by, you could race within like a centimetre of somebody and not actually drive them into a wall or off into the grass.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys like Garth Tander seems to be in the pool all the time, and young kids that are really trying hard. Is it their lack of training, or do they need more time on the road, or do they need more practice to judge those fine lines when you're racing at those speeds, 260 k's down the straight, and you've got it one corner to go for it? Where do you go? Do you find that a worry when you're out there battling with these young guys?
I'm still young.
Younger guys.
And probably Dick was including me in that. But it's, I suppose, like someone like Garth Tander, who's come straight out of Formula Ford last year, got this huge opportunity to go and drive a V8 all of a sudden, and he wanted to prove to the world that he was the best there was. And obviously that didn't work out. He's slowly learning. He's had about $9,000 worth of fines in the last 8 months, I think, so that's sort of started to slow him down a little bit. But it's things are changing, you know, the eras have changed. There's a lot of younger guys out there now sort of filling the spots, and, you know, they're prepared to take a few more risks and do a few more silly things just to try and find that, get that one spot. V8 racing is very different. The cars are very heavy. They're very powerful, and you can get yourself into a lot of trouble very, very quickly. Dick's had a lot of experience, and he's got to say, he's probably slowed up a little bit since, you know, in the last few years, and things are getting a lot tougher. He hasn't had a lot of success in the last few years either. The cars haven't been quite there, and sort of that makes it pretty difficult as well, especially when there's, you know, some 20-year-old bashing up your bumper up behind you and trying to get you out of the way. So, you know, there is a few problems, and that's why that we do have the system we do with cams, and they do a pretty good job most of the time trying to control. It's very hard to control everybody out there, because sometimes there's more crashes and incidents than there is people to take care of it. But it's very competitive, it's very close, and everyone's trying to find that hundredth of a second. There's no tenths or seconds, it's hundredths now. And, you know, sometimes you try a little bit too hard.
Do you think, I know Bathurst is so unique, but do you think Adelaide has the potential to be bigger than Bathurst in terms of an endurance race?
Well, I think by the looks of it, and I'm sure it will be, this weekend we'll have more people than any Bathurst has ever had. And I don't think that'll change. I think that it'll just grow over the next 4 or 5 years. I don't see any reason why it won't. It is huge. It's very, very different. I think the format will get changed a bit over the next year. It'll get changed. I don't agree 100% with the way it's been formatted this year. It'll be great for the crowd, for racing drivers' point of view and a team point of view. The way the points and everything is structured it makes it very, very difficult, and you do have to be there all day, every day, both days, to get any points out of it. So, you know, it's going to be fantastic, and, you know, it'll get... This is his first year. There's always a few stumbling blocks to start with, but I see it being absolutely enormous. And it's just gonna, you've basically got your F1 back. You know, I think it's wonderful to have, and just the work that's gone into it is phenomenal. I think it's fantastic. So I just hope it's you know, it just grows and grows from strength to strength.
Question.
Yes.
I think the event this year is going to set a standard that for over 2 days. It's going to obviously incorporate TV and everything else, and also bring the people the race to the people, bring the streets to the people, as opposed to the people going to the race like putting effort to the LR. Do you think that next year that this will change the rules? Because I believe it's going to be a huge success this weekend, but also there's going to be other
Like well, I'd like to think so. Obviously, not every state has got the support of the governments as what Adelaide has for this event. I think, you know, it is just absolutely wonderful. And it's going to raise the standard, as I said before. It's going to raise the standards of every other circuit, every other part of the country that gets a race is going to have to really up their ante, because everyone's going to go, well, I went to so-and-so and so-and-so, but Adelaide was just unbelievable. You know, next year I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to go to Adelaide. You know, and really it's going to raise the standards of them all. So I think it's fantastic. you have to prepare very, very differently to it. I think the sprint race format is great. The three race format is fantastic. People want to see cars lining up. They want to see the starts. They want to see, you know, the first two or three laps when everyone's biffing and bashing and sorting themselves out. So I think the format with the sprint racing is fantastic. I've got no complaints there at all. But the variation, to have a little bit of a variation thrown in around the place as well, just adds spice to it. It just gives it a bit more character. And it makes it more interesting, and no one's complaining about that. But I think, you know, not all of us are on of agreeance with every round of the championship or every race of the championship counting for the championship, like Bathurst and that. You know, I still believe Bathurst should be standalone as Bathurst itself, because I think it takes too much away. It'll take too much away from the championship itself. Bathurst has always been one race, and you know, a very special race, and it should be Bathurst, and the rest of it should be the championship. So you know, there's things like that. You never please everybody, do you? But I think the format with most of the sprint races is right, but a bit of spice in there with Adelaide, Bathurst, and the Queensland race, I think is fantastic. And I reckon in the next 4 or 5 years we'll have 15 rounds, 16 rounds. You know, it'll grow.
Mark, I think you heard it.
Greg, that's working. A two-pronged question, really. We have some very good drivers in this country, and we've had many good drivers over the years. But how difficult to impossible is it now for an Australian driver to break in Formula One? That's the first part. And how much does a Greg Murphy make out of driving a tin top as opposed to some of the open wheelers? What's in it for you?
I make a living out of it, Mark. I love it. I'm not struggling to survive. That's for sure. You know, it's. I love doing my job, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. So, you know, it's comfortable. There's a lot of drivers out there, or a few drivers getting paid a lot more than I am in Australia. But you've got to work up there and work towards it and make it worthwhile. Formula One, someone getting into Formula One, very, very difficult. I think we've got a couple of guys who are getting pretty close. Mark Webber, of course, everyone probably knows, is getting very, very close. His association with Mercedes-Benz is fantastic, and he worked very, very hard to get it. And I think that, you know, he's our best bet at the moment. Someone else that might be in the fold in the future will be James Courtney, a two-time world karting champion. I think he's got what it takes to get there as well. He's racing Formula Ford in the UK this year, and I'd say he'll do pretty good at that. And he's got huge connections with a lot of owners of F1 teams, Stewart and Jordan and a few others as well. So we've got a couple of guys, but it's extremely difficult. It's being at the right place at the right time and just talking to the right people, and it all falls into place. I mean, really, you can do as much work as, you know, as anybody, and just work and work and work to make it happen, and it'll never happen. But, you know, if you just happen to be at the right place at the right time, it's possible. So it is very hard. We're not going to have influx of Australians and New Zealanders getting into Formula One, but it looks like there might be a couple coming up in the near future.
Greg, our race also this weekend for the former Adelaide Race of Champions, the 60s Formula One car, reminds me that many New Zealanders have been highly successful in motorsport, and the remarks I made through Grant about your talents, I think, are recognised by a lot of people. But have you got any reason why so many New Zealanders have been so successful, if you go back to the era of Bruce McLaren and Chris Amon? And there's a whole range of people there. Given your population size, you do very well in motorsport.
Yeah, I don't know. It is bizarre. I mean, I don't have an explanation for it, I suppose. It's always been a country that's loved motorsport and followed it and just, yeah, really taking it in. It's, you know, the old days with Levin and Grand Prix over there, New Zealand Grand Prix, used to have, you know, Jim Clark and Stirling Moss and all these names going down there to race. So I really don't know the answer to that, why it is, but they have a great series run down there. Motorsport's always been very popular, and, you know, I suppose it just, the racing's always been tough, so it trains you pretty hard, and you've got to work very hard to get there, so I suppose it may be the reason. But I think it's just fantastic that this part of the world down here, so far away from everywhere, can produce people that are as good as anywhere else in the world.
And perhaps just one final question from Jane.
Jane?
Greg, it's almost an all-male-dominated field on the weekend. What are your thoughts on the only female driver, Karen Brewer?
Yeah, well, Karen's obviously very determined to continue her motor racing career. I think she's done extremely well in what she's done, but it's made pretty hard for females, I suppose, to get in there, which I don't quite know why. I think there's a lot of good female drivers out there who are capable of doing extremely well. It just doesn't seem to work out that way, does it? There's been some extremely successful drivers overseas who have been connected with fantastic teams such as marks such as Audi and Mercedes-Benz and things like that, and they've always done extremely well. Australia doesn't seem to have produced or been let produce a very, very good female race car driver. I mean, if Kieran had the opportunity and the right equipment, she might blow half of us away, I don't know, but no one seems to have given her that chance as yet. But, you know, it's always there, it's always could happen. We'd like to see a few more females out there racing with us. I mean, they rub bumpers and bash the best in karting. There's some very good female kart drivers out there at the moment winning all sorts of things. So there's really no reason why that can't be transformed into actually full-scale cars. But it's all about getting that break, I suppose.
Thank you very much, Greg. Could you all put your hands together, please, in appreciation? I think everybody here will be certainly following your fortunes over the weekend, and we can now put a face to one of the names, and I'm sure you'll be high on everybody's interest level for the weekend. On behalf of the Press Club, I don't know whether this is part of the training regime, but take that.
On Sunday night.
Bob Main tells me it's stronger than 100 octane. So Steingarten Riesling from Orlando, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
My pleasure.
I'll hand over to Sue. We've got the raffle to draw. Greg, we need you back up here to draw the raffle.
Yes. Here we go. You got your tickets? For 6 bottles of wine. A mixed half dozen from the Press Club. Who have we got, Greg? There's Ryan from Messenger. Des, stay there. We'll get it to you. We'll get it to you.
He's an avowed teetotaler, Greg.
Yeah. For the Telstra gold pen and pencil set.
He drives Bridgestone.
Obviously.
Pink H86 Jim Clark. Ah, there we go. It's down there. Yes. What is it? Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Terrific. The Alan, come up here with your vouchers. From Ragone's, $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gugee Street. For some wonderful seafood. And Alan's got the voucher for that. And that's a white ticket, H67. And it's Judith Bleachmore! Where is she? Good on you, Judith! This bird works so hard for the... She's just fantastic. Couldn't go to a nicer person. Okay, and Alan Rogers has got another $50 voucher. This time from his... fabulous restaurant, Ragone's in Lee Street. We all love Ragone's for some Italian. A purple ticket, D8.
James.
James. Somebody from the Tizer. James. Wakeland. James Wakeland from the Advertiser. Fantastic. And finally, for the Cartmans, South Australian Brewing Pale Ale, Southwark Pale Ale.
Brady.
Oh, Brady Harron from the Tizer. Ah, look, sitting at the same table. Fantastic. Thank you, Greg, very much. Just a reminder of the next two luncheons that we've got on April 29, Peter Garrett on the Australian Conservation Foundation, and on May 18, the one and only Sam Newman. Anything to add to that, Grant?
Judith Bleachmore wants me to remind everybody in the media that the Youth Media Awards, entries for the Youth Media Awards, close on April the 20th. So everybody should get in there. There's some terrific prizes to be won there. And that's it.
Thank you for being with us today. Thank you.